Michelle Franzen. In Israel, a ceasefire and hostage release deal with Hamas remains stalled, and the threat of an attack by Iranian proxies in the north is increasing. The U.S. beefing up military assets in the zone of conflict. ABC's Ann Flaherty has more.
With tensions in the Middle East at an all-time high, the U.S. military is now moving additional troops and assets to the region. U.S. officials tell ABC News the goal will be to try to deter Iran and to protect troops in the region. According to two U.S. officials, Iran has readied more than 100 cruise missiles for a potential strike. Ann Flaherty, ABC News, the Pentagon.
The former interpreter for Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani has surrendered to federal authorities in Los Angeles. Ipe Mutsuhara is charged with bank fraud and a gambling scheme, authorities say, that allowed him to steal $16 million from Ohtani's bank account. Lingering storms on the East Coast after a week of heavy rain, wind, and tornadoes across much of the country. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Next year's race for Wisconsin Supreme Court appears to be more wide open now that Justice Ann Walsh Bradley is retiring. Conservative Judge Brad Schimel is the only candidate so far, but liberals Susan Crawford and Chris Taylor are now said to be thinking about it. The winner of next year's race will likely decide the court's ideological majority. Clean water advocates say they're happy with the EPA's new legally enforceable benchmark for PFAS in drinking water. Lynn Thorpe of Clean Water Action says it's not enough to clean up PFAS already in the water.
We need to take equally aggressive action to keep the chemicals from getting into the water and the environment in the first place.
Wisconsin adopted its own PFAS standards for drinking water last year, but the new federal standard is stricter. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
There will be an open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court next year as Richland Center native Justice Ann Walsh Bradley has announced she'll step down at the end of her term. That means the seat held by the liberal justice will be up for grabs next April after liberals won a 4-3 majority on the court 1 year ago. 73-year-old Bradley is the court's longest-serving justice elected to her first 10-year term in 1995 after 10 years as a Marathon County court judge. In her statement, she said it's time to bring fresh perspectives to the court. Three liberals, Dane County Judge Susan Crawford and appeals court judges Pedro Cullen and Taylor, are all considering a run. Conservative former state attorney general and current Waukesha County Judge Brad Schimel announced his candidacy in November. Marriage is making a slight comeback in Wisconsin. Data from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services shows the state's marriage rate, which has been steadily declining since 1980, returning to a pre-pandemic level. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Todd Allbush Show.
Luke, I'm just going to say it again. The real problem here was that goofy in-season soccer tournament that they had. That threw everything
off. What are you talking about? That was December basketball. You just couldn't figure out the rules.
You're exactly right. There are goofy rules I couldn't figure out. I don't like them.
You would not do well with driving on the left-hand side of the road.
Oh, absolutely not.
You would just start freaking out.
Yeah.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Bucks take on the Thunder. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks will try and make it 3 wins in a row without Giannis when they take on the Thunder tonight in Oklahoma City. Milwaukee back on the winning track after beating the Celtics and the Magic. The Brewers' road trip continues this weekend in Baltimore against the Orioles. Milwaukee's Freddie Peralta set to pitch against Tyler Wells. NFL, the Packers' Kenny Clark says he expects to be back to lining up to more over the center or guard as the defense switches to a 4-3 scheme. College football, Luke Fickell back for his second year in Madison, holding spring practice.
We talk about don't be occasionally great, don't be occasionally a tough guy. Can you consistently be really good? Can you consistently have that toughness day in and day out, whether you get a thigh bruise, you get a little bit dinged? It's a tough sport. It's a tough game. And the only way you're going to get better, the only way we're going to truly create this culture and environment to grow is by having guys be the example of that.
That's the Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly sunny today and a bit breezy as winds are whipping out of the northwest at 30 miles per hour, dragging our high temperatures down to the upper 50s. Sunshine stays abundant all weekend long and temperatures rise into the 70s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 59 degrees.
Matt and Air on Air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved winged thingies.
Winged thingies! That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, winged thingies.
The winged thingies.
Matt and Air on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. From Hillsboro to Highland, your choice for news, talk, and sports is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
Up, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday, everybody. The Brewers are heading east to take on the Baltimore Orioles this evening. I know I've been looking forward to the baseball season quite a bit, given that the Bucks, not so much this year. You can, of course, watch that on Apple TV, but if you're sick of having to buy a bazillion paid subscriptions to just hear the Brewers game, you can get it across these Civic Media radio stations by downloading that app for free from your favorite app store. WRCE in Richland Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. Of course, WRJN in Racine and Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. And County WCQM in Park Falls. So that's what I got on the docket this afternoon. Calvin, thanks so much for filling in for Anya, who's got a well-earned day off this Friday.
Yeah, I'm always happy to be with you, Maggie. It's always a great time.
Indeed. Again, thank you. We got a ton to talk about, but just one quick programming note. If you were looking forward to hearing from my good friend Paco VR, who is the owner and chef extraordinaire at Campali on Brady Street, my favorite taco stop in the city. He actually got word late this afternoon that he and Campali will be at AmFam Field this weekend for the doubleheader Luke Combs shows on both Friday and Saturday night. So I said, Paco, don't worry about the radio show. Go sell some tacos to the Luke Combs fans. Of course, folks, if you're going to be in and around AmFam Field, it's AmFam Field still, isn't it, right? AmFam Field, the name changes get me every year. And if you're going to be around AmFam Field this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon into the evening, maybe give yourself a little bit extra time. It's going to be bumper to bumper. I wanted to talk to you all today about how bad of a judge Aileen Cannon is. This is the federal judge appointed by Trump with some of the thinnest credentials I've ever seen for a Article III federal court appointee. She flew through the confirmation process because at the time, Republicans controlled the Senate. and didn't get a lot of scrutiny. She's the one that got the Trump documents case down in Florida. She is a terrible judge. I've talked about her before. However, what has gone on over the past basically 2 weeks, culminating in a decision from Judge Cannon finally just a couple days ago, is kind of shocking in that it's much worse than really any of us thought. So I'm going to break it down for you because her incompetence is noteworthy, and it's not just noteworthy because she's a crappy judge. It's noteworthy because she's depriving every single Wisconsinite and every single American of an expeditiously handled legal process so that Mr. Trump can prove his innocence. Right? Like, that case is there's 0% chance that case is heard before the election. And that's a shame because it's the one case that I think is clearest, that every single one of us can understand, that has the least amount of gray area, the least amount of potential to argue, oh, well, it's partisan or whatever the retort may be. You don't get to take national security classified documents and stash them in your gold bathroom. You just don't. You don't get to do that in the first instance. That's a crime. But when the FBI asks you, sends you a subpoena, says, please give us the documents back, and then you move them around and try to hide them, then that's definitely a crime. This is the case that we all can understand that was a betrayal of the oath that any president takes to protect and serve us, which includes protecting our most sensitive secrets. And we have this nitwit of a judge who cannot actually read the law and apply it. So it's the issue that makes this so very plain is a little wonky, but not all that wonky. So, Calvin, let's not even worry about the wonk. I'm just going to ask you a pretty basic question, and just give me your sort of first impression thoughts, all right? Sound like a deal?
I'm game.
Okay, cool. And of course, you listeners, friends, those that disagree, you're all welcome to chime in too. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Here's the question. Would it seem to you that there would be a difference between documents and evidence that are reviewed during the period of a court case that are called discovery? It's when one side shows their evidence, the other side shows their evidence, that there may be a difference in the public's right of access to those court documents, especially where there can be threats against witnesses, where you've got national security issues at play, and the public's right to access and see evidence that is produced at trial, right? So we're not in trial yet. We're still in this period of time where the government and the defendant here, Donald Trump, are the government's got to show some of the witness statements and some of the other information that's the basis of the criminal complaint. So the question is, just intuitively as a citizen, does it seem to you that there might be a different standard of disclosure for that evidence that's being given to the defendant during the discovery period and the public's right to see that versus the evidence that is actually eventually entered into court and presented in trial?
Yeah, intuitively, I think there would be a difference.
Yeah, especially where we've got, again, national security secrets. And as we has been so readily documented in the press, regardless of what outlets you're reading, threats against witnesses, right? Aileen Cannon, this judge, doesn't get what my buddy Calvin and all of you at home get. Yes, discovery isn't trial evidence, and the public's right to see discovery is more circumscribed under federal law than is the public's right to access evidence produced at trial, especially a criminal trial. Now, anyone who has practiced more than 5 minutes of law and actually been in a courtroom on any sort of case that involves sensitive information. And I'm not even talking national security secrets. Think like trade secrets, you know, patent information, research, or even discovery information that includes witnesses' addresses, social security numbers, email address, you know, that kind of stuff. If you have done this once, you, a lawyer, would know there are all sorts of seals and protective orders that apply to sensitive sorts of information, especially during the discovery process. Judge Cannon doesn't understand that. Her ignorance, her lack of common sense, her inability to do even the most basic legal research here is truly shocking. And here's what, I'm going to end up showing it to you, but there's an absolute, oh my gosh, drop the mic, there it is, buried in these ticky-tacky, wonky legal filings in the Trump documents case, where you go, oh my gosh, it's actually the smoking gun that proves that she's stupid. So you don't even have to take my word for it. And what we've got here, when you've got someone who's this bad, this stupid, unable to research appropriately, is that what it's defaulting to and what legal observers like myself are pointing out is that when you are not smart enough to research and follow the law, when you can't even identify what the applicable standard, legal standard, is correctly, when you fail at that most fundamental job of a judge, we should all be asking, well, what then is Judge Cannon basing her decisions upon? Because it ain't the law. And what we are coming to see more indisputably every day is that Judge Cannon either lacks the smarts or the courage to arm herself with the correct legal standards to actually preside over this case in a fair way. And she has simply turned over her judicial discretion and her autonomy as an Article III lifetime appointee to the federal courts over to Donald Trump. Because when she's getting these things wrong, her decisions aren't breaking for the government. They're breaking for Donald Trump. And the reason that I keep talking about this case is, again, it is the most straightforward. It is the one we all can understand. It isn't stale. It's also one of the most recent. In other words, the underlying facts occurred after the presidency, after January 6th. It is the most recent, the most clear-cut, the most straightforward. And oh, by the way, it was the one that was filed first of all these cases, other than the New York AG civil fraud case. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere, because I'm going to give you the smoking gun, the thing that proves that Aileen Cannon doesn't belong on the bench and sure should not be presiding over this, one of the most important criminal cases in modern American history. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back after these brief messages.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project. Now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design programs in-store or on Menards.com. Explore all the lumber options and check out more of our great deals going on now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards. Contact D&T Pump and Well for well service and pump replacement. It's springtime and D&T is scheduling spring and summer projects. Mary and Derek, owners of D&T Pump and Well, are insured and do new installs, and they fix existing systems including submersible pumps, booster pumps, and jet pumps. Ask about the constant pressure system that gives you the best pressure and quality water out of your well. Contact D&T Pump and Well at 606-5596. No pressure, no water, no problem. Call D&T Pump and Well at 606-5596. Serving Southwest Wisconsin. Check it.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Also, does not give a damn about her reputation. Otherwise, she might even take care to read the law before rendering decisions. So, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to me here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got Calvin in the booth this afternoon. Happy Friday, y'all. I'm talking this hour about how bad of a judge Aileen Cannon is. And it isn't just for the sake of beating up on her. We can now tell beyond any shadow of a reasonable doubt that she has neither the courage nor the chops to manage Donald Trump's criminal case. And if I'm a criminal defendant, and I've said this for my entire career, I actually want a good judge. I don't want a dip, even if the dip is more inclined to favor me. And the reason is that dips make terrible interim decisions. Things can get overturned. It ain't good. As a lawyer, I have always wanted to litigate against really good lawyers because you can actually get down to the nub of the issues. You can the court or the jury can clearly understand what the core of the dispute is. When you got dummies, either as lawyers or as judges, it just gets all messed up and there's sideshows and it's unclear and bad law is made. And so to me, her incompetence is a serious deprivation of the rights of each and every one of us, no matter what our party, to see and hear the evidence presented clearly in court, to have these charges against Donald Trump tested by the evidence, and to have a decision, a jury's verdict, come swiftly so that we can all be appropriately informed as citizens and voters on this, the most straightforward of cases that is about the most basic betrayal of a president's oath to keep the nation's secrets. That is the oath that he broke, regardless of what party you're in. So I want to get into like what actually happened here. If you are on the line, stay there. I will get to you. Don't worry. Because I want everybody to have their say here, and I also want to be sure that I can share with you, again, this smoking gun, the thing that proves that she has no idea what she's doing. So here's how this all kicked off. On January 16th, Donald Trump's attorneys in the Florida National Secrets Documents case filed a motion that basically said, we would like discovery, we would like access to basically any and everything in the entirety of the federal government. No. I mean, we could have a debate about how ridiculous the motion is. But they basically said the entire executive branch of government must produce whatever it is that Trump asks for. Now, I think Donald Trump has the right to some pretty significant discovery in this matter. So I'm not commenting on that. And it's not even the merits of that request that led to this huge, enormous error by Judge Cannon. It's this. When he filed the motion, there was a protective order already in place that Judge Cannon had properly enacted that said that the DOJ and Donald Trump's lawyers, when you file motions, you can't reveal witness names. You can't, certain information has to be redacted from documents. And all of this makes good common sense, right? Like you don't need to have a JD to understand why that would be the case. We're talking about national secrets, war plans. Yes, we probably shouldn't have all that plastered around during motion practice before we even get to the damn trial. Okay? So they Trump's team files this brief that says, we want documents for the entire executive branch of government. Ta-da! Oh, and by the way, we would like to file this and the other evidence, the other witness names that we're relying upon to make this motion and the documents that we're relying upon as the basis for this motion. We would like to file all that without the seal applying. In other words, unredacted, listing the witness names, addresses, information. Right? All this super sensitive information. The judge had already put a protective order in place, okay? So now comes what I'm going to call sideshow number 152 in the Trump documents case. Now they have to have an argument about this request from Trump to be able to unseal and remove the redactions related to the information that was provided to help support the stupid motion that I want information and documents from the entire executive branch of government. Okay, are you all with me? Does this make sense, Calvin? Am I explaining this okay?
I'm following.
Okay, because you give me a thumbs down if this ain't tracking. Okay, so here's where we are. That motion is made on January 16th. On January 18th, Jack Smith's team files a 4-page. Well, of course not, you big dummies. There's a seal in place. And the first page of the motion filed on January 18th says this. Nevertheless, in other words, they start by saying, of course, transparency is good. And we want this evidence ultimately presented to the American public because we believe it will show that Donald Trump is unquestionably guilty. Then it says this, quote, nevertheless, out of concern for witness safety and the further reasons explained below, the government opposes the motion for temporary leave to file a redacted brief. In effect, a motion to disclose discovery material that is already subject to the court's protective order. To the extent that the motions to compel or their exhibits identify prospective government witnesses, constitute Jenks Act material for same, which is basically sensitive witness statements that are covered by a particular federal law, or contain certain additional discrete national security sensitive information as specified further below. And just say, no, dummies, there's a protective order already in place, and this isn't the stuff that gets to become public before we've gotten to trial. Okay? They only use 4 pages. I mean, there's a table in there, so it's really 3 pages. I'd say it's the entire response from the government is maybe 300 words. Maybe. Okay? Because this is such a freaking no-brainer. So Judge Aileen Cannon then, you know, ponders about deep thoughts for 2+ weeks. And on February 6th, drops a ruling that basically says, oh, no, go ahead, make all this information public, Trump team. That's fine. Yeah, there was, sure, I issued a protective order. Sure, there are death threats. But, you know, Jack Smith didn't cite any specific death threat. So, yeah, the First Amendment applies and all this stuff should become public. But that's not the law, because there's a difference between the legal standard that applies once you're in trial and the legal standard under the First Amendment, yes, admittedly, the legal standard that courts and the Supreme Court have developed that applies to discovery material before trial. They're two different things. She doesn't get it. Okay? I'm going to come back. We're getting to the smoking gun. Do not go anywhere. If you're on the phone, stay there. I'm going to take your calls. But I want to give everybody the smoking gun because you're not going to believe how stupid this is and how dangerous it has become. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin here on a Brewers Friday afternoon. Call or text us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4840.
Coming up Monday on Matt Nair On Air, 3 headlines and a lie, and it's tax day. I hope you'll join us.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster?
because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
A little bit of good news for our Wisconsin County Fairs. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. More funding from the state to help pay your premiums. Details on the way. We're changing it up on our next farm adventure east. I'm Pam Yonke. Come on along. We're going to Cape Cod, October 19th through the 26th, starting in Boston and visiting a nearby dairy, then out to Martha's Vineyards, where we'll find out about alpacas and experience a sand dunes adventure, plus cranberry production. They don't do it like we do. Visit holidayvacations.com, enter keyword Pam for more information and a travel video, or call 888-557-1020 for a brochure. Wisconsin Senator Joan Bollwig, chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee, says some of the recent legislation enacted into law by Governor Tony Evers includes a little more state funding to help out county fairs, specifically county fairs and their responsibility to pay premiums to their exhibitors. Bollwig says it was welcome news for a lot of those hardworking county fair volunteers.
At the bill signing, we had one of the directors of the Elroy Fair brought their granddaughter along. I mean, this is something that these people, who most of what they're doing is volunteer work, they're just really excited that this is going to give them a little more breathing room and assurance that the folks that are coming to their fair are going to get that a lot of that premium from the state. So now they can make some of that investment in the fair itself, without the responsibility and what they feel is the responsibility to provide premiums and encourage people to come to their fairs.
That's Wisconsin Senator Joan Bollwig, chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee.
I look at this dairy cow, and again, it's the animal that I love. The things that this dairy cow can do and the way that she can produce milk, to me, there is no substitute for milk in the world. And to be able to keep cows and help cows produce that for people, to me, that's a privilege. I'm Dr. Bill Zimmer. Nutrition and microbials, commonly called probiotics. That's BioVet. Learn more at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
Peanut butter overload, banana pudding eclair. What are they? Some of the top flavors at this week's International Dairy Foods Association annual innovative ice cream flavor. And all of those flavors currently available at grocery stores. Peanut butter overload offered by Windy Knoll Farm Market. Banana pudding eclair offered by Hershey's Ice Cream. The competition attracted 50 entries from across the United States offering their latest flavor innovations. So there you go. Quite literally a look at what's happening in food news on a Friday. More at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm PM Yonke.
Mostly sunny today and a bit breezy as winds are whipping out of the northwest at 30 miles per hour, dragging our high temperatures down to the upper 50s. Sunshine stays abundant all weekend long and temperatures rise into the 70s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 60 degrees at our studios.
Earl Ingram.
Let's talk a little bit about what public education did to move this nation forward and continues to do, even though it's under assault.
The one place where we get to live out and practice what it means to be a citizen in a democratic institution. The attacks on public education are really attacks on democracy.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
Change, change, change.
Change, change, change.
Change, change, change.
Change, change, change.
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Today, I'm talking about a recent discovery dispute in the Trump documents case that I think unquestionably shows that Judge Cannon, who's presiding over the case, is unfit to not only be a judge, but most especially to be handling this case. If you want to get in on the discussion, 855-75-CIVIC. My thanks to my patient callers waiting because I want to give everybody the smoking gun that exists here. I hear you. This is my friend Angie, who's got to go to work soon. Hang in there, Angie. I'll get there. And if you miss it and got to go to work, you can always find this episode of the Maggie Dawn Show at civicmedia.us. You can catch it. So you got juicy stuff to talk about over cocktails and Brewers games this whole weekend. So on page 4 of this dippy-do nitwit February 6th order, Judge Cannon writes, the party requesting closure must demonstrate that such action is, quote, necessitated by a compelling governmental interest and is narrowly tailored to serve that interest. And she cites a Supreme Court ruling and a case that involved the Chicago Tribune. Okay. This is important, the Chicago Trib case. Because she cites to page 1311. Okay. This is the Chicago Trib case, 263 Federal Reporter, 3rd at 1311. Okay. Everybody, 1311. This is the magic thing. That's one of the cases that she's citing for this principle. And again, she's talking about pretrial motions, sealing pretrial motions. Again, yes, we've got pretrial motions here, but we're talking about specific information contained within the motion, not the entire motion. And there's been case law that has developed over time that has drawn distinctions between evidence presented at trial and that is related to or referenced or included with pretrial motion practice. And in this same February 6th decision, this is now on page 6, she says this. The special counsel, this means the Department of Justice, also alludes in general terms to the concern that, quote, public disclosure of witness identities or their statements in advance of trial also risks infecting the testimony of other witnesses or unnecessarily infecting the jury pool, and that there may be safety issues involved. Okay, so she knows that that's an issue, okay? But she goes on to say, enough of all this. Request from Donald Trump granted. Release the hounds. Release the information. The DOJ gets this ruling and on February 7th, 2 days later, responds with now 22 pages, well more than 350 words. It basically says, you've applied the wrong legal standard. Okay? Here's Jack Smith writing on February 6th. The court reasoned first that because the defendants chose to attach these particular discovery materials to court filings, the government bore the burden to demonstrate that sealing or redaction is necessitated by a compelling governmental interest and is narrowly tailored. The thing I just read. Okay. And the DOJ reminds Judge Cannon that she cited to this Chicago Trib case, page 1311. Then the DOJ says this. This conclusion was wrong in two respects and should be reconsidered. First, the 11th Circuit, and that's this Chicago Trib case, not the Chicago Trib case. Let me just read it, and then I'll tell you about the Chicago Trib case. First, the 11th Circuit has held that the compelling interest standard applied by the court does not apply to documents filed in connections with motions to compel discovery. Oh, yeah, you mean the thing that's actually being discussed here? That's not the legal standard. Okay. Which instead may be sealed or redacted simply upon a showing of good cause. And guess which case is the basis for that? Chicago Trib. Pages 1310, 1311, 1312, and 1313. This is the smoking gun, ladies and gentlemen. The very case that she cited in her decision also made clear that she was applying the wrong legal standard. And that case, the Chicago Trib case, was then basically echoed and affirmed, restated in a way that made the same distinction in the 11th Circuit case, United States v. Nickens. So we were talking Chicago Trib case that she cited, page 1311. Yep, Jack Smith says, you got the right case, but you needed to keep reading, Judge. You know, you got to read all the pages of the decision, not just the cherry-picked parts from the Trump defendants. This is the smoking gun. She cited correct case, didn't read the whole thing, didn't get the legal standard right, failed to what we call sight check that case, which would have led her to the 11th Circuit case, the Nickens case. This is basic first-year law school stuff, people. It's ridiculous. And here's the DOJ goes on, also says the government has readily satisfied the good standard, the good cause standard here. And they cite Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure 16. So like these are the federal rules of criminal procedure that, you know, apply to Donald Trump's case that judges are supposed to enforce. Cites FRCP 16, which says, in some of its advisory committee notes, which the judge should be researching and familiar with, it is obvious that a protective order issued under the good cause standard would be appropriate where there is reason to believe that a witness would be subject to physical or economic harm if his identity is revealed. It's in the freaking federal rules of criminal procedure. But it doesn't need to be, because my friend Calvin knew that. You know that. Because it's common sense. So Judge Cannon can't read the law, can't identify the right standard, doesn't know the federal rules of criminal procedure, and lacks common sense. And she's going to preside over the most important national security case since the Rosenbergs were tried for treason. Let's go to the phones here. Thanks so much for your patience, folks. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, I think Judge Cannon is not that stupid and not that incompetent. I think she is that unethical. That's just based on not only this, but and I wish I could cite specific examples, but she's made a whole bunch of pretrial decisions that have slowed this case down, that have she's essentially been acting as an additional defense attorney for Trump, for crying out loud. Aren't there procedures that would allow a forced recusal in this case?
Yeah, that's right where what we're up against now, Jack. And I think what just went down here, this is what I hope Jack Smith's team is thinking about. Is there any precedence that shows that this level of gross incompetence requires recusal of the judge? Because every time you see evidence of this kind of incompetence, again, her errors aren't sort of, it's 50-50. Sometimes, you know, like you watch a basketball game. Oh, they make a bad call. They make another bad call and they kind of break evenly. And so all comes out in the wash. No. She's so bad at this or so totally unethical that every time these egregious errors are happening, they're always benefiting Donald Trump's criminal defense. Now, I will say this as a general point. If judges are going to get things wrong in criminal cases, generally speaking, you want to more or less get them wrong in favor of the defendants so that you do not create grounds for appeal that would reverse the conviction if reached. But the kind of stuff that we're talking about here aren't nuanced, close, gray area questions of admissibility of evidence. It's not that kind of stuff. This is black letter law. Can you actually do legal research and read cases correctly? Do you know the federal rules of criminal procedure? And she doesn't. And the thing that really blew me away is, so she gets this request to reconsider her decision from Jack Smith 2 days after. So this is February 6th. This dumb decision comes down. February 8th, he says, "Judge, please reconsider. You got it wrong. Here's the case law." And I actually think a fairly restrained brief from the Department of Justice. I applaud Jack Smith for not being like, "Hey, dummy." And it's meticulous. And she then waits. That's February 8th. A week goes by, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 2 months go by on a sideshow dispute that should never have been a question on a motion that's so stupid because the entire executive branch of government now has to produce discovery in this case. Of course not. You get what I'm going at? The delays, it's wrong. And now 2 months have passed. Tick tock. Tick tock. And so finally, earlier this week on April 9th, Judge Cannon followed the breadcrumbs, picked up her law books, put on her reading glasses, and read the case law. But instead of just issuing an order that gets right to business, and I've read the case, this was an error, or I understand the point, let's make this distinction, here's the rationale. There are paragraphs in 24 pages from the judge basically saying, "Well, Jack Smith didn't tell me what the rules are. How was I supposed to know? He didn't give me specific instances of witnesses being threatened. How was I supposed to know? Because you're not supposed to be a complete idiot living in a bubble, just accepting everything that the defense says to you, because you're supposed to be able to do legal research. You're supposed to be able to read the entirety of the very case that you cited, Your Honor." And I mean that with all sarcasm intended. Some of her language. "As a preliminary point, the arguments and evidence advanced in the special counsel's motion could have and should have been raised in prior filings. Denial of the motion would be appropriate on that basis." Really? Now, there's a general precept in the law that if you fail to raise an argument, you fail to point out certain facts, you waive those arguments. That ain't that. Not here. Again, this isn't a close point of law. This isn't some listing of fun. "You should grant me summary judgment and I should win the entire case because of these three reasons." And then on appeal, "Oh, wait, there's a fourth reason." That's when that kind of rule kicks in. This is, please don't disclose incredibly sensitive information and tell the folks that helped nearly topple our government who our witnesses are so that they can receive death threats, which are well documented in the press. This ain't that. This wasn't a listing of arguments. This is the entire question, Your Honor. You need to do your research too. And the reason that Jack Smith didn't cite all these cases was because there was already a freaking protective order in place that the judge issued herself. If I sound exasperated, angry, frustrated, beyond my limits, as I am as a lawyer, I'm enraged, I'm disappointed, I'm concerned. Jesse from Madison, always nice to see you on my caller list. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Thanks for taking my call. Thank you for your analysis. It is so thorough and in-depth. It exceeds even what Lawrence O'Donnell gives us, which is already great. I'll say this, Jack, the previous caller, is kind of, you know.
Hey, hang on one sec, Jesse. I'm going to take a couple of quick messages. We'll come right back. Thanks for the compliment. We'll go right to Jesse in the phone lines when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. What's your thoughts on all this stupidity and corruption? 855-7.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned. Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network blasting out statewide this Friday afternoon. I've been sharing with you a deep dive into what I think is the smoking gun that should lead to Judge Aileen Cannon's removal from what is the most important, maybe not the most important, the most clear-cut, the most straightforward, the most intuitively obvious of Trump's criminal trials. She was in the right case. She still didn't get the law right. She read right through it and twisted herself into a ridiculous decision on a sideshow motion that should never be granted, that would place witness lives at risk, jeopardize the prosecution, and, you know, manage to pack in 2 months of delay rather than simply reading the law in detail and correctly, rather than simply observing the federal rules of criminal procedure, which she is oath and duty bound to enforce. And here's the money part of her decision that finally came down on April 8th. And then I'm going to go back to Jesse because I want to hear what else he has to say, because it's always good. Here we go again. She's going to blame the special counsel yet again for her own incompetence, which, as if being wrong and really wrong and not researching correctly and not knowing the rules and being a hack wasn't bad enough, now you're going to blame someone else. This is from page 10 from Judge Cannon's ruling on April 9th. Although the record is clear that the special counsel could have and should have raised its current arguments previously, the court elects, upon full review of those newly raised arguments, to reconsider its prior order. No kidding. Defendant's motion to compel in this case is not subject to a public right of access, whether constitutional or common law in nature, because it is still ultimately a discovery motion as distinct from a substantive pretrial motion requiring judicial resolution on the merits. This conclusion flows from Chicago Tribune versus Bridgestone, 263 F3D. Oh, yeah. Those pages in the 1300s. Yeah, those. Pages 1310 to 1313. Are we all... am I wrong to be this mad? She blames someone else and then basically says answers the question that I asked Calvin at the beginning of the show without talking about the law one little bit, and Calvin got the answer. And guess what, Calvin? You too can be a federal court judge appointed for life. Defendant's motion to compel is denied because there is no public right of access to a discovery motion, because that's different from a substantive pretrial motion requiring judicial resolution on the merits. This conclusion flows from Chicago Trib, pages 1310, 1311, 1312, and 1313, which I, Judge Cannon, cited to, but still got the answer wrong in my original decision. But that's Jack Smith's fault. Jesse, thank you again for your patience. I'm sorry I had to cut you off before. What else would you like to say this afternoon?
No hurries, no worries. I just think that the previous caller was right. That's what I was going to go with, is that I don't think Judge Cannon is dumb. I think she's acting in bad faith, and it's not just unethical. I mean, it's like Jefferson said when talking about King George, once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, and thrice is enemy action. I think Judge Cannon has demonstrated very clearly open contempt, not for her own court, but for the law and our national security. There's reason to believe that because of these security breaches that Trump is guilty of, well, he'll be found guilty of if yet there was a fair judge, that a couple hundred of our intelligence assets across the world have been killed because of this. This has endangered national security, and the only way to deal with it is that if Democrats take back the House and hold the Senate, that they impeach a number, because it's not just her. It's at least two or three or four members of the Supreme Court and a blanket of members of the federal judiciary. There needs to be a congressional committee solely tasked, just like Elizabeth Warren called for, that goes through and cleans out and establishes repercussions for ethical violations for federal judges. And on top of that, it doesn't require two-thirds. We just need a simple majority of both houses for Congress to expand the Supreme Court. Do it. It's way past time. Let's just move this down the field.
Thank you so much, Jesse. There's so many ideas and great perspectives there. You know, another one of the judges that pops to mind is, I believe the guy's name is Judge Ho, sitting on the Fifth Circuit. He was the architect of the Enhanced Interrogation Ain't Torture memo back when he worked in George W. Bush's White House. It's the Fifth Circuit that has made a bunch of these wackadoo crazy rulings that have required Supreme Court intervention. And listen, when this Supreme Court is stopping an appeals court ruling from going into effect on an emergency basis, it's got to be weird. The Fifth Circuit's also the circuit where we've got this one renegade judge who's a trial court judge, I think in Texas, that issued the ruling about mifepristone on Good Friday and pulled it off the market overnight. I mean, yeah, Jesse's right. There are federal judges totally out of control. Aileen Cannon just happens to be the one on the most clear-cut criminal case that Donald Trump is facing, slow-walking the whole thing, and can't even read three pages of a case correctly. I'll just tell you this. I practiced almost exclusively in federal courts for the first decade plus of my career. Never saw a state court. All I did was federal civil litigation. I have never, ever heard a judge whine like Judge Cannon did in this motion. Most of them would have blustered about some other way to try to save face. Not this one. Oh, it's somebody else's fault because I can't figure out what the law is. Heaven help us all. When we come back, I am going to be really excited to bring my friend and Civic Media's own Terry Barr onto the Maggie Dawn show, because O.J. Simpson just passed away, and Terry and I were around when that happened. She actually interviewed a member of the Goldman or Brown family. I don't know exactly, but we're going to talk to Terry after news, weather, and sports at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss our discussion of O.J. Simpson, all the cultural implications that are still going on today. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back with more in just a few minutes.
Hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
Friday on Nightlight, I'm joined by Emerson Lehman, Rob Thomas, and Terry Barr. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WRCE website at WRCE.fm, your news just for the Richland Center area. I'm Joanne Krulatz with WRCE News.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinee on Air with Jane Matinee. Weekdays 10 till noon on News from the Center. 107.7 FM and 1450 AM WRCE and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. warning Israel that Iran is preparing a possible attack in retaliation for air